Okay, good Erev Shabbos. It's Parshas Pekudei. So in this week's Parsha, we're going to talk about the difference between what's called Malacha and what's called Avoda. They, in many ways, are synonymous terms. That Malacha implies a kind of work, and Avoda implies a kind of work. But we'll see in this week's Parsha that there's a nuance to this, and that also gives us some insight into the work of life. So one of the things we discover that's interesting about the building of the Mishkan, the setting up of the Mishkan, is that after everything was completed, we find out that, according to the Medrash, for somehow, some reason, no one's able to actually put it together. Even though all the pieces are there, they're not able to put it together. And it takes Moshe Rabbeinu is the only one who's able to put the Mishkan together after all the construction, even though everything seems to be completely fine. The Kli Yakar, if you want to look it up, the Kli Yakar quotes Vayikra Rabba, Parsha Nun Beis Os Dalad, and he says as follows. He says, Shehoi Yisrael B'chochach Meleiv Mekim in Sambishkan. The Jews and all the people of intelligent heart, meaning, the ones, the artisans, the ones who knew how to do crafts, like Bezalel and his team, they were trying to put up the Mishkan, the Kimon Sambishkan, below Yachlu Lakimo, but they were not able to build it. After, they assembled all the parts, everything seemed to work, but they couldn't put it up. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Asok Atar B'Hakam Aso. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, you should be the one to be personally involved in putting it up. And then as Moshe did this, Omen Me'elav, it stood on its own, miraculously, Shenemar Hukam. Because the Torah uses a grammar, a passive, reflexive verb. It says, Hukam, it was established. That's how you would translate it. Instead of Moshe built it, it arose. That's the implication of Hukam. So it sounds like it happened automatically, and it did according to the Neis. According to the Chazal, it was Neis, it came up on its own. So one thing we have to wonder about is, what's going on over here? What's the story with why was the Mishkan not sufficient to be built by other people? And why did it take a miracle to build it? And why did it take Moshe to build it? Another very interesting artifact, which is in the Ramban, in Perek Mem, Pasuk Beis, and not an artifact, but a thought about the Mishkan, which was an artifact, but a very interesting idea, is that for some reason, the Mishkan was constructed and destructed several times a day during the Shivas Yimei HaNeruim. Apparently, it needed to be built. You couldn't bring Korbanos Tzibur unless the doors of the Teichel was open, according to the Gemara and Zvachim. So they had to have the Mishkan built, but it was assembled and disassembled several times. So we'll take a look over here in Ramban, in Perek Mem Pasuk Beis. Ramban quotes also the Yikra Abba, and it says, V'isi, okay, there's a here. Moshe would build it up and take it down twice a day, b'chol yom. Rabbi Chanina Gadol omer shlosha pa'amim. Rabbi Chanina Gadol would say that he would take it up and put it down three times a day. And the Ramban offers a thought. He says, "Itachin shekol zeh regilus." This is to help establish a pattern and a familiarity. So that people should know exactly how to put it up and take it down. It's a interesting push-up shot, but it's still a very strange thing going on over here. That Moshe was the one that needed to put it up, and then he had to put it up and take it down several times. Sounds like there's some backstory over here that we don't know about. So let's hold on to our curiosity about this unusual thing that the Mishkan could not be actually erected without Moshe's help, and that he had to do it several times a day for the whole week. And let's read on and take a look at another wrinkle in this story, which is that the work of the Mishkan is ultimately described as malacha and sometimes as avoda. So, for example, in Perek Lamed Tes, Pasuk Mem Aleph, it says, Kein Asu B'nei Yisrael Es Kol HaAvoda. So did the Jewish people all the avoda. And then, in the next pasuk, it says, Vayar Moshe Es Kol HaMalacha. And Moshe saw all of the malacha. So it certainly sounds like we're talking about the same thing, but it changes from avoda to malacha. Now, the Klai Yonker over there, he raises the question. He says, Yesh l'daktik lama nemra mitchila v'atecha kol avodas mishkan olamoid. Why does it say avoda? And then also the self, asu b'nei Yisrael's kol avoda. And then Malakar Mitchila Avoda Vachaka Malacha. Why does it change from being described as Avoda and then becomes, and then described as Malacha? So the Klei Yonker, one of the ideas he puts forward is that there's a difference between Malacha and Avoda. Malacha signifies a piece of work that the intention is to finish it to completion. It's a project, fixing something, building something, and that's why the Briyas HaOlam, the creation of the world, is called Malacha, right? We'll say tonight in Kiddush, Vayechal Elokim Vayom Hashvi'i Mikol Malachto Asher Asa, right? He finished his work because there was a plan to be executed to create the world, whatever that was, and it was a specific amount of work. And it needed to be done. So that's malacha. Now, avoda, though, the Klei Yonker explains, is more like an ongoing process that it is something that you continuously do. So, for example, korbanos, right, or tefillah, that's considered avoda because you do it all the time, and there's no such thing as enough korbanos were brought. Everybody has to bring as much as they can. In fact, in Malachim, when Shlomo HaMelech, who of course was extremely wealthy and successful, it describes over there in great detail the incredible number of korbanos that Shlomo HaMelech sacrificed daily because he could, right? Because he was a king and he was wealthy and he could bring thousands of korbanos instead of just one or two that a regular person might bring. But anyway, so when it comes to avoda, there really is no limit. Avoda is a process. It's something that continues. It's service. And the Mishkan consisted, according to the Klei Yonker, the Mishkan consisted of a combination of malacha and avoda because there were certain things in the Mishkan that had to be built. They need to be done in a certain way, and they have to be brought to completion. And indeed, they were brought to completion. On the other hand, there also were things about the Mishkan that were more avoda, that was more something that had to happen in the hearts of the people. They needed to have the proper kavanas, the right intention to both build the parts of the Mishkan in viewing it with a certain kind of spiritual energy, whatever, you know, whatever that means, however that's done, through focusing on the proper intentions of that particular mitzvah, and also obviously the spiritual demands that having a Mishkan, having the Shechinah in their midst would entail. And that was avoda. That wasn't malacha. That was avoda. And that avoda continues. Now here's something interesting. In Avos, Perek Beis, Mishnah Tezayin, they make an observation. Lo alecha hamalacha ligmar. Lo ata bencha nibatul mimena. Even malacha, which malacha is something that really is supposed to be finished. There are things that have to be done. So one should know the whole Torah. We're all obligated to do whatever we can to learn the whole Torah. It can, in some sense, be done. One can learn the whole Torah. And even so, right? Even the malacha is really not on you to finish. You cannot hold yourself to a standard that you absolutely have to complete it, and otherwise it's not a success. But at the same time, but you're not free to slack off and not do it by saying that it's impossible to do. So it's this balance, even when it comes to malacha, even when it comes to parts of the Torah that Hashem expects out of us. And the Torah, you know, it's also under the heading Avodas Hashem, he actually says too, he says, Hashem does not, he's not a Batronia, like a baron. He's not like a cruel, demanding taskmaster with his creations. And he understands that people can do what they can do. Each person is only obligated to whatever they can do. Even if he doesn't do a complete avoda, he still will receive his reward for his avoda. And then he goes on to quote this, and he also goes on to say how important it is not to slack off. But the interesting thing is, right, in life is trying to find the balance between working really hard at something and taking responsibility to try to finish it properly, and also the idea of not feeling despair at overworking and trying and feeling like you're not accomplishing anything, because it's always a setup. If you try to do something, and when you try to do it, you don't feel good about what you're doing because you don't feel that you're going to complete it, or you feel whatever you do you don't complete, then you just feel defeated and have no energy to keep trying. So it's an important challenge. And it's interesting that intuitively we understand this when it comes to children. Like when a child, let's say, learning how to walk or learning how to talk, and they take their first steps or mumble some kind of word, no one says, well, you know, that's good, but could you try to say it a little more clearly? I don't think you're trying hard enough. No one ever says that to a little baby who's starting to talk. Everybody's thrilled when he or she starts to form even the sounds that might be interpreted as words. He said daddy, he said mama, he said something. Or if he tries to walk, nobody goes, oh, well, you know, that's really not so good. I think you should really try harder. So we understand this intuitively when it comes to children, that they're involved in a process and that it takes time for them to do it. We have a harder time, it seems, giving ourselves the same kind of kindness, consideration, and respect. It seems it's a lot harder for us to look at ourselves as we try to do things and, number one, understand that some things, first of all, can never be completed. Some things are just an avoda, that it's a daily process. And some things, even if they're malacha, it's lo alecha malacha ligmar. Hashem understands that not every malacha can be completed by a human being. Another way of looking at it, Stephen Covey, a famous time management expert, wrote The 7 Habits of Effective People and other great bestsellers. Anyway, he talks about circles of concern in your life and circles of influence in your life. He says that, you know, we're surrounded by various circles of concern. There are many, many, many things that we worry about. constantly. But he says that we also have circles of influence. We have things that we have an impact on. We have ways of affecting things. And he said most of the time, people waste a lot of energy focusing on their circles of concern. They focus on the things that make them anxious, but they don't necessarily focus on their circles of influence, on what they could accomplish. Now, getting back to some of our original questions that we were curious about, right? We noted that the Mishkan had to be built by Moshe. Somehow Hashem held back, and the Jews couldn't build it themselves, even though they completed all the parts and it should have fit together perfectly like an erector set. Somehow or another, they were not able to do it. And we noted that it had to be Moshe. We also noted that Moshe did it several times a day. We'll see more about that in a minute. But so what's that all about? So the Klei Yarkar, again, in I believe it's Perek Mem, the Klei Yarkar says, Yesh bazeh remez l'chol ha-ma'asim. This is really a hint and a lesson to all the activities asher adam osa that anybody does. Ki k'tzara yara adam mashlimam heichel v'gamor. It's really not in the ability of a human being to start and complete totally his work. El adam hu amasil, rather, man starts, Hashem yigmaril yodo, but Hashem is the one who finishes. God is the one who finishes. And then, that's really powerful enough. And then he goes on to quote the famous Gemara in Kedushim, Alamad Mabez, which says that the Yetzirah is constantly trying to snare the person. And if Hashem didn't help him, he would not be able to overcome the Yetzirah. So, and then once Hashem helps the person truly asks for the help, so then he's able to succeed. So the Mishkan, right? The Mishkan here, according to the Klei Yarkar, the fact that Moshe had to build it himself, and then he couldn't even build it, and it required a miracle, was a statement to the artisans and the craftsmen and everybody that was working so hard to build the Mishkan, saying that all our efforts in this world, all our efforts are really only the beginning, and we can't do it without Hashem's help. And of course, this is reminiscent of steps 1-3 of the 12 steps, right? We admitted we were powerless, and that our lives have become unmanageable. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Right? So those three first steps are saying the same point that the Gemara and Kedushin is saying, and what the Klei Yarkar is saying, which is that when it comes to things, it's really impossible for humans to do it on their own, and they really have to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the picture and ask for his help. And with his help, then they're able to accomplish. Now, that we still have a couple of loose ends over here. One is, the Ramban says, he says that Moshe would construct and destruct the Mishkan 2 times. He says, some people say 3 times, so he quotes. He says Rabbi Chanina HaGadol says that that Moshe Rabbeinu constructed and destructed the Mishkan 3 times a day during the 7 days of Miluim. So what's that all about? 2 times, 3 times. So I was trying to think about that and see if there's any kind of hint. And it occurred to me that the Medrash might be hinting at Tefillah, because as we know, there's a famous machlokas, it's in the Gemara Brachos on Chafayin and Beis, a machlokas Rav and Shmuel about whether Mariv is a reshus or not, meaning shachros and mincha, chachamim or mesakin. Those are tefillas. One is connected to tamashal shachar, one is connected to tamashal bein arba'im. they are representative of the two major sacrifices that were brought in the temple in the morning and in the afternoon. And then Maariv, some say, is a Rishus, meaning it was a custom to pray Maariv, and others understood it as a Chova. So the two or three times of the taking up and down the Mishkan might be reminiscent of the two or three times of Tefillah. And what's it saying? It's saying that the efforts that Moshe was doing in putting up and taking down the Mishkan was showing people that it is tefillah, it is prayer, that bridges the gap, that allows people to do what really would be impossible without Hashem's help. And the Medrash is hinting at that with the two or three times, because it's a tip-off that we're talking about tefillah b'tzibur. The last question, though, is why Moshe? Fine, Hashem wanted to teach the Jewish people this valuable lesson that some projects are a process, and that it's important to understand that you have to try, and you need Hashem's help. That's not enough for you to do it yourself. You need Hashem's help. You need to pray. And maybe even the fact that it was put up and taken down so many times is to show you, right, in 7 days in the Lulim, Sheva Yibol Tzadik will come, right? The Tzadik will fall and get up seven times. That you don't succeed. You have to go back and start again and start again and start again, and that's recovery. That you don't necessarily achieve it the first time or the second time or even the third time. So all that's understood. But why did it have to be Moshe? Why didn't the artisans? Why couldn't they have been the ones to put the Mishkan together and take it apart, So one answer might be that perhaps if they were able to build it, then they would have attributed it only to their skill, because they did really work very hard, and it is human nature to say, Kochi va'otzem yadi, you know, my strength and my abilities, also is a chayal hazeh, you know, made this great acquisition. So it would certainly be the human nature for them to feel that they were the ones that, you know, it was our hard work. We put everything together, we followed the directions, we made sure everything was lined up. So by the fact that they found themselves impotent and unable to put the Mishkan together, despite the fact that everything was supposed to fit together perfectly, and they had to turn for Moshe to help, that put them in a frame of mind that they could then digest the lesson that Moshe was imparting, which is that all our efforts need to be blessed by Hashem, and that we need to pray for His help, and then we can succeed. So that's a possible answer, and perhaps as well, an added wrinkle is that it was an even more powerful lesson that Moshe needed a mace to build it. Even Moshe couldn't do it himself. So even the greatest spiritual person, who one might think is really complete, he was not complete enough to finish this project. And he had to build it and take it apart, and build it and take it apart, and build it and take it apart many, many times, to show that even the greatest of individuals, such as Moshe, he still had to struggle, and it wasn't perfect, and he needed Hashem's help to grow and change. I'll just add one final piece over here, which is that the Yalkut Shimoni talks about one of the Nisim that were in the assembly of the Mishkan, which had to do with the Briah HaTichon. Now, through all the panels, through all the beams of the Mishkan that composed the walls of the Mishkan had three walls. Then the west side just had some beams and a curtain over it. But the other three sides, the north, the south, and the east, were made out of beams interconnected together. And the beams had many different ways of attaching and latching onto each other. But one was, it had a center beam, a Briah HaTichon, a center pole that went all the way through the center of the beams to hold them tight. But according to the Alka Shimoni, it was a nes that that pole went through. Let's imagine you start from the northwest side and you stick it through those poles. Now when you get to the end, when you get to the corner, the pole has to make a 90-degree turn to head toward the south on the east wall. And then it, when it finishes the east wall at the other end, it has to make a 90-degree turn as well to head now in a westerly direction to complete the third wall. So it was a miracle that this beam, this metal beam would, I think it was a metal beam, would bend along the curves. And perhaps the message there is, right, that with Hashem's help, right, the innermost part of a person, their heart, right, their core, can bend miraculously. And actually, if you add it up, it's 290-degree angles, so it becomes 180 degrees, right? So the nature is that the person can turn around completely, that the heart can turn around completely with Hashem's help. Okay, we're going to stop the recording in a moment and then allow people to talk as well.